your attention, please.
Radio Unleashed on regularradio.com.
Okay. And we're back, City One Blackout on regularradio.com.
With a little death metal intro.
Yeah, a bit of a, you know, it's a good start for us, right?
I like it.
In the meantime, we've got our first guest of the show, filmmaker Albert Chan of Chan Allen Productions.
Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good.
All right. You've got your own guest with you.
Yes, this is Mary Nidacore. She was one of the actresses in the film.
All right. And hey, joining us over the phone, other actress, Carrie Patterson.
Hi.
Oh, good. She's still there.
Hi, Carrie.
Hi.
All right, Albert. So we're here to talk about your new film, The Commitment, which was actually recently finished.
It's actually in the final stages.
Oh, final stages. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Being finished as we speak.
I'm
cracking the whip on these people.
Well, you know, you're here, you're gone, so they might be just kind of like, you know, lazing about.
Yeah. I need to be there.
Yeah, what? The pin in your back is turned, man. Those lazy, lazy guys.
All right. So why don't you tell us about the film, about the story?
So the story is about an interracial gay couple who are adopting a newborn baby, and they meet the pregnant Asian birth mother, who's played by Carrie.
Mm-hmm.
She was never really pregnant. We had her in a pregnancy suit, and, which felt very real, by the way.
So she's not a method actor, we get this.
And so we meet the pregnant Asian birth mother. I say we because I was one of the lead actors, mm-hmm. Along with Jason Fenton, who couldn't be here, unfortunately, today.
Ah, too bad.
Yep. Mary plays the social worker, the adoption mm-hmm. social worker, who sort of introduces us all and sort of navigates us.
Mm-hmm.
So it was based on the experiences that I had with my husband when we went to adopt a kid very recently,
okay.
actually, a newborn baby. And most people really aren't familiar with what happens in the domestic adoption process. It's basically the women, the birth mothers who are pregnant, they mm-hmm. basically choose a person or a couple out of like a bunch of profiles, and you could be sitting in the pool for quite a long time before someone chooses you.
I was going to say the process goes for could be up to like 3 years, right?
Yeah, I mean they tell everyone, you know, it's a roller coaster ride, first of all, and also, you know, you have an average wait time of like 12 months. But in the end, everyone gets picked, which is kind of an interesting thing because you have a whole wide variety of people that you wouldn't think would get picked. Like, we weren't sure, like, would somebody choose a gay couple? And sometimes there's people who are single parents and, you know, you wouldn't think that they would have they'd be at a disadvantage. But, you know, you never know what these birth mothers, how they connect because they could have been raised by a single parent and want to give their baby to someone who's a single parent. So you never know.
Okay.
Every kid needs a home.
Yeah.
Exactly. Now, when you were going through the process, did you encounter any, stereotypes about gay couples or people like may have like felt about gay couples having kids?
No, probably because everyone was really polite.
Yeah.
But actually, we were kind of surprised that. We were, you know, there's a lot of paperwork and a lot of preparation that you have to go through in order to even qualify to be in the pool. Like,
mm-hmm.
we had to do, like, medical exams. We had to, you know, we had to give permission to have our, like, child abuse checks, criminal checks, FBI fingerprinting. We had to get 3 reference letters.
So that makes you better than most parents.
Exactly.
Jeez.
But even before we finished that process, we received word that there was a local birth mother who was interested. Mm-hmm. In having a gay couple parent her child.
Okay.
Wow.
And so it's kind of weird because like you're sort of like not in the mainstream and that's what makes you get noticed.
Sure.
And that incident was actually what we based the commitment on. Because what ended up happening is that this birth mother eventually changed her mind.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And that's what people were trying to tell us when they mm-hmm. said it was a roller coaster ride because we thought, oh yeah, we got picked right away before we were in the pool.
Sure, yeah.
And it wasn't actually until we had our 5th match that we actually got our son.
Wow, jeez. All right. Okay, now let's talk about the two characters here, mm-hmm. The character you play and the character that Jason plays.
Right.
Now, one of the things which I got from checking out the trailer for this is that it seemed that this couple wasn't sure if they were really like ready to have a child in their lives. That there were certain Just like certain things like about their lives they were going to have to like change in order to have a child.
Right. So there were a couple of sort of character flaws that I introduced in both these characters. Mm-hmm. So Robert is the character that I play. He's the Asian American. And I sort of made him a little neurotic. So he really needed to like get everything correct. And he was sort of not really taking his husband, Ethan, taking him for granted a little bit.
Okay.
And in Ethan's case, he was a little fearful of becoming a father and not really sure if he could do it or not. And in some ways, when there's an element of when they find out that this birth mother has changed her mind, there's an element of sort of relief on Ethan's part. But and they sort of have to deal with, you know, what do they do now after this happens?
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Now, how much does experience I would just kind of went through mirror what you went through? I mean, is like larger the same, or did you want to be a very like different, very different story?
It's based on a lot of the same facts, okay. And even some of the lines in the conversation that we had in the movie with the birth mother, mm-hmm, are taken from stuff that actually happened to us. But of course, you know, whenever I see, like, you know, a novel that's adapted into a film, mm-hmm, like, you always wonder, well, why did they make these changes and all that? And going through this process of creating this film from a real life experience, I sort of got a lot of insight into why it's actually necessary to change a lot of what is in the novel or in the actual real life experience in making it into a film, because you have to sort of sharpen the story and actually, you know, throw out extraneous materials and actually make it, carve it into something that's understandable and that makes sense.
Okay.
And to heighten the drama, obviously.
Sure, of course. Yeah. Of course. Okay, Mary, let's talk about your character. So you serve as kind of like the guide for the couple?
Yes, I play the social worker, and I'm also an adoptive parent. And
okay.
I've been through the process with, although the opposite, I'm the adoptive parent of a Korean boy. And so the social workers they sort of have to wear both hats. Mm-hmm. As Albert pointed out, in a domestic adoption, the birth mothers, the birth parents are the people who choose the parents for their unborn child. But in an international adoption, which is what we decided to do, really the agency is acting as the conduit, and the social worker has to sort of wear two hats, where she's an advocate for the birth mother and also for the parents.
Well, I have a couple of questions. I'd like to know where this film's going to go. Where are we going to see it? And do you have a plan to how to roll this out? Do you want to take it to festivals? Do you think you're going to do private screenings for the type of audience that you think will most be receptive to it? It's a touchy subject these days. So, I mean, it may not play to all audiences. So what's your plan to get people to watch this movie?
Right. Well, there's several different niches that we've actually identified. So obviously the big one is gay and lesbian. It's... I didn't make this movie to be a political statement or anything like that. I'm just trying to illustrate, you know, a gay couple trying to live their life and, you know, creating their own family. And if people construe that as being political, well, that's great. But it's basically just showing a slice of life for a gay couple.
I think your film has a strong message to it that may be politicized even if you don't want it to. I think your intention may not have been, you know, that there's not a strong political message, that the wrong people are going to find that message and then they're going to, you know, take to it in the wrong way. I mean, I'm thinking of like the Reverend Phelps of the world holding, mm-hmm, up signs outside a theater that's showing this or something. That could happen. I mean, I actually was involved with the Laramie Project, for example. And, you know, Reverend Phelps actually protested that. So, you know.
But then again, there's only six people that are pretty much in the Westboro Baptist.
There's seven.
Wow.
Sadly, fortunately, when you do the Laramie Project, you learn all about it. So, I mean, this is the type of thing where I think, like, you know, you've got a good strategy to start with, like, the gay list. Do you ever think of taking it to, like, maybe this could actually be something that maybe the bigger festivals?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I really want it to be popular in mainstream festivals as well. I mean, the story really isn't about a gay couple. It's not really about adoption, although those are very strong themes. I think it's really about just a love story between two people who are married and are committed to one another. And in the end, it's how they deal with each other that's really the main story. And so I'm hoping that people will identify with that.
So okay. Pretty much the line that's breaking point of like any relationship of married couple of like, okay, we want to bring a child into this.
Right.
That's your main linchpin point.
And also, you know, when something unfortunate happens, how do they deal with it? And do their true colors show up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but going back to the film fest, where's your pie in the sky? What's the main one you're looking at?
Well, the pie in the sky, I think, would be – I'm Canadian. I was born and raised in Toronto. Oh, so Toronto. I would nice. Love to have it at the Toronto International Film Festival, which is in September. So we're actually trying to make the deadline, which is why I was saying – we want to finish the film.
Crack the whip, get them back to work.
Similar to Sundance, but you can submit a partially finished film.
Like right, Sundance but based on my previous finished. Experience, it's always best to submit the best possible version of your work. I mean, even if it's even if you have to wait until the next year.
Right.
Okay. All right. Now, this is not your first work, correct? You've actually done a couple films prior to this.
Right. I had a film back in 2008 or so. It's taken me that long to make another film after that experience. And that was a silent film, actually. So, actually, The Commitment is my first talkie. And it was a silent film just based on observation of everyday life, observing people on the tee, you know, in the park, and just how they interact with one another. It just follows a guitarist and this girl who would meet one day on a park bench, and they sit on opposite sides of a bench, and eight other strangers come by and interact with them in unusual ways.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, these two people are sort of brought together physically on this very long bench.
Okay. So how do you really get the dialogue across when there is no dialogue?
So
good actors.
Yes. Mary again was another one of the 10 actors on the film, and her son, her adopted son Ben, was also an actor. But basically I've been attending an acting studio for about every week for about 5 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And Mary's been there even longer. And so the people there that we work with, we're partnered with different scene partners every week.
Mm-hmm.
And so we sort of have the same sort of understanding, and we can communicate with each other very well. We know what each other wants and that sort of thing. And so I cast everyone from that acting studio. And they know not to, like, push. Like, when there's no dialogue, there's, like, a temptation to like show everyone what you're doing and what you're thinking.
Yeah.
When really the audience can grasp it so well, they'll read into it and project onto the actors that are on the screen.
Okay, cool. Now, you wrote this, directed it, starred in it.
Catered it.
Coffee and donuts, right?
Actually, you didn't cater it. I think Pico did.
Yes. Mary has a restaurant in the South End, Pico Pizza Ice Cream Company. It's very good.
Wow, it's a great
I go there.
I love that combination.
I go there regularly. It's delicious.
And it's been a big supporter of Albert's films.
Wow, I'm getting hungry already.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
What's the address? Go for the full
address, Mary?
It's 513 Tremont Street.
Oh,
okay.
All right, you're right nearby. Yep.
Actually, you're
pizza and ice cream,
aren't you?
Yes,
I've eaten there. It's right next door to the Boston Center for the Arts.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, so I've done some work for the Boston Center for the Arts too, and certainly we've gone over there. You own it?
Yes.
Oh wow, excellent. Yeah, we go there a lot.
Oh, good.
You got many hats over there.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
But Albert, you've directed and acted. I was wondering, which one do you prefer?
Well, I consider myself an actor first, and part of the reason why I got into filmmaking is because I wanted to give myself the roles that no one else was giving me, and also to be able to tell my own stories from my own unique perspective, whatever that is, you know.
And did the whole crew process, how was that to get everyone together for it?
I think it's about developing relationships. So as an actor many years ago, you know, I would work on a student film or an independent film, and you know, there'd be somebody who would strike me as being like just really on the ball or somebody I'd really want to work with in the future, and I just kind of filed them away in the back of my head. And that's pretty much how I've assembled my crews.
Mm-hmm. So just by trial by fire, just meeting the networking, meeting constantly on.
Yeah,
Because you have a long list of different films and TV shows that you worked on.
Right.
We're checking that one out.
Yeah, Max is a huge fan of SVU, so immediately that's what he came up with.
Yep. Sorry.
Love that show too.
Yeah. Now, out of that show, your role was a banker.
Right. I was. It was an episode where. The guy from Will and Grace, Eric McCormick, he was the prime suspect, and I was one of his colleagues who was providing him with an alibi.
Oh.
Truthfully, not a lie.
Yeah, okay. All right, very cool. All right, let's take a break, you think?
Oh, yeah, let's go to a quick music break. And
all right.
Back.
All right.
Certainly.
Who do we got up here?
We got Jumpin' Jumba with Black Bag. This here is Citywide Blackout on RegularRadio.com.
Your attention, please.
Radio Unleashed on RegularRadio.com.
And we're back. Citywide Blackout on RegularRadio.com. I'm your host, Max, joined by Matt Zappa and Matt Martino.
Hello.
And hi. Our guest for the opening of the show, Albert Chan, with his new film, The Equipment, which is on its way to being done.
Yep.
Getting there. Just going back and kick and crack the whip, right?
Exactly.
And joining us over the phone, we had a little technical problems there, but Carrie Patterson, one of the actresses in the film.
Hi.
There we go.
Hi, Carrie. Yeah, we want to hear from Carrie.
Yeah, exactly. We heard from Carrie the entire thing. She was like called him like four times. We keep on losing her.
We miss you.
But so whatever you say, talk really fast because you may get, you know.
What are you going to say? Be quick about it. No. So your role in this one was you were on the pregnant mother-to-be who was deciding about which couple to give your child to. And my first question to you is, how do you sort of get into this role? Do you have kids of your own?
I don't. And, you know, what's interesting is I was actually adopted. Wow. I was born in Korea, and, you know, my family is white, American, and, you know, they adopted me when I was 3 years old. So, you know, this was a really personal film for me because I really felt connected to it. However, I think the difficult thing for me was, you know, my real story was kind of on the flip side because my birth mother did give me up. And, you know, I feel like I've had this tremendous new life. And, you know, so going into this role, I was a little bit biased because ultimately, you know, Victoria, the birth mother, decides not to give up the child. And, you know, it was a struggle because, you know, I felt initially a difficult time removing my own judgment. And so, I mean, that's basically what I had to do was go through a process where I couldn't judge this character. And I really had to get into, you know, what this character was about and, you know, why she would make this decision. So, I mean, as an actor, it was challenging. But at the same time, it was kind of cathartic, I guess.
Okay. Okay. Would you describe Victoria as being a very sympathetic character? Do you think like the audiences are going to really feel bad for her, or are they going to say, "Oh, she's like giving up her kid"? You know, what's she thinking?
I think when I was developing the character, you know, I think she goes through a journey. I think initially she really connects with, you know, the two prospective parents. And, you know, she thinks at that point that she's making the right decision. But ultimately, you know, she goes on a journey and she makes the choice that she thinks is best for her and her child. And, you know, I'm not really sure how viewers would respond to that.
Okay.
I think, you know, people watching it will become very emotionally attached to the two main characters, and so they might have, you know, a gut reaction. But I'm not really sure.
All right.
I tried not to, you know, because I didn't want to put that judgment in there. I want people to view it and kind of make the decision for themselves. I didn't want to, you know, push them one way or the other.
Okay, so we are down to the last a few minutes before we go. Albert, one more thing I want to mention, and this is something that I got, again, from the trailer. The child's name, I know that that was like a huge like a comedy point for this one, and I think like when the names Victoria had was Cyrus or something like that.
Silas.
Yeah, Silas.
Well, actually, the funny thing is that the actual birth mother in real life.
Sure.
One of the two names that she really liked was Silas too.
Jeez.
That's how it ended up in the movie.
did you go with that or did you pick something else?
Oh yeah, we went to something else.
Okay, thank God.
Now, this is a question I have, and maybe it comes up in the movie, so I'd have to watch the movie to get the answer. But who would choose the name of this child? Would it be the surrogate mother, or would it be the new parents?
Well, actually, generally, what happens in a domestic adoption is that the birth mother is encouraged to choose a name for their child, and the birth certificate will be issued with that birth mother's the name that the birth mother has given the baby. And later on, when the adoption is finalized, like me and my husband still haven't finalized the adoption of our son yet, but it will be in the next few months. But after that, then we can apply for our second birth certificate with the name that we have chosen.
Oh.
Okay.
But right now, you know, officially he has this other name, but we're using the name that we've given him.
Uh-huh, I see. How long have you had the child now?
Andrew was born in October.
Oh,
and
okay.
He was born in Ohio, so we had to drive all the way out there and drive him all back. His first road trip.
There you go.
So did you trade in your sports car on the way to get a minivan?
or a station wagon, yeah. You know?
Well, the funny thing was is that we changed him like in the middle of nowhere. He had this like incredibly poopy diaper. And we were both sort of scatterbrained. And when we got in the car and we drove for like 3 hours to the next rest stop, and then we had realized that we had left the diaper on top of the car.
Oh, God.
And it was still there after 3 hours because it was so heavy.
And that's your thought for the day, folks.
Dogs?
That's exactly what people thought of when I told them that.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right, well, we are down to the end of the segment. So, Albert, Mary, thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting us.
And Carrie, thank you again.
Thank you.
All right. She's still there. Good.
Good. Yeah, I look forward to seeing this one. It sounds interesting.
Yeah, definitely. Where do folks go if they want to learn more about this or check out the trailer?
They should go to our website, which is thecommitmentmovie.com, and the trailer will instantly play once you go there.
All right.
I've made it a no-brainer.
You go there, play, it's done.
Yes, thecommitmentmovie.com.
All right. Very cool. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Rennie Memora joining us over the phone and a whole lot more. This here is Citywide Blackout on regularradio.com.
Broadcasting